In today's critique, we examine a life-coherent framework for health, healing, and human flourishing, an academic white paper that integrates the inner biology of cellular repair with outer socio-ecological determinants to propose a new, holistic paradigm of life capacity. Let's dive right into our first piece of feedback. The framework introduces a powerful architectural model, but risks diluting its impact through an overwhelming density of specialized terminology.
Yeah, that is exactly what stood out to me right away, too. The weakness here is really about working memory. You know, the paper does this fantastic job of diagnosing the fragmentation of modern health, but then it frequently stacks these complex coinages and redefined terms without giving the reader any breathing room to internalize them.
Oh, definitely. You get hit with, like, salugenesis, salutogenesis, homeokinesis, civil commons, and elastic load, just boom, 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 in rapid succession.
Exactly, yeah. And because the text establishes this massive six-level architecture, moving from the cellular level all the way out to the civilizational niche, the sheer volume of nested taxonomies and philosophical guardrails creates a huge cognitive burden.
Right. A burden that might actually alienate the exact clinical and policy decision makers it aims to persuade.
I completely agree. When a reader encounters a new structural framework, their brain is actively trying to map the relationships between the parts. If the parts themselves are just labeled with dense, specialized terminology, they spend all their energy just decoding vocabulary.
It feels like reading the blueprint for a massively complex clock without ever seeing the hands move to tell the time. We see the gears, but we do not see the mechanism in motion.
That is a great analogy. So my suggestion here is to streamline the nomenclature by anchoring the most complex biological and sociological terms to a single recurring concrete narrative or patient archetype that evolves through all six levels.
Oh, I like that. So instead of explaining, say, salugenesis and salutogenesis in separate theoretical silos, you bring in a concrete example.
Yeah, exactly. You introduce a hypothetical subject right at the beginning, say, a midlife patient experiencing chronic metabolic dysregulation while living in a high-stress, digitally captured urban environment.
And that gives the reader a navigational anchor. You demonstrate how this patient's cell danger response and proteostasis at level 1 interact directly with their psychosocial transduction at level 3.
Right, and their salutogenic affordance field at level 5. And you show it in real time. The reader doesn't have to memorize the abstract definition of psychosocial transduction because they're literally watching it happen to a specific person.
Right. A person who cannot shift their mitochondria from a defensive state into a repair state because they have continuous exposure to noise pollution and food insecurity. The outer field actively blocks the inner biology.
Exactly. The vocabulary just becomes the tool we use to describe that very visible tragedy. And actually, we can push this streamlining even further.
Yeah? How so?
The author should use the exposure, repair, balance, and margins concept as the primary anchoring metaphor throughout the entire text. You only deploy the hyperspecific terms like homeokinesis when absolutely necessary to distinguish them from standard medical definitions.
That makes a lot of sense. Margins is a concept that requires zero cognitive overhead. I mean, everyone understands the state of running out of margins, whether biological, psychological, or financial.
Right, yeah. If you establish restoring margins as the central spine of the argument, all that specialized vocabulary can just be introduced as subsets of that larger, highly intuitive goal.
And you know, that structural shift also solves the issue of the heavy philosophical citations. The core text relies deeply on Maturana, Galting, and McMurtry.
Yeah, it does. And while that intellectual lineage provides crucial structural integrity, leading with Maturana's structural coupling or Galting's structural violence risks making the biological to societal bridge feel purely academic.
Right. I want to push back on the necessity of those heavy philosophical citations remaining in the main flow of the text altogether. If we are speaking to a hospital executive, those citations might create immediate friction.
Oh, completely. When you are operating in a clinical environment, you just don't have time to parse philosophical foundations.
Exactly.
You need to see how the architecture dictates patient outcomes. So moving those citations to the background, perhaps the footnotes or a theoretical appendix, might make the argument feel much more urgent. Yeah, moving them isn't about discarding the philosophy. It is about translating it into flesh and blood. by mapping structural violence directly onto our patient archetype, showing how it literally manifests as an unresolved inflammatory loop in this person's body, it becomes a clinical reality.
The reader absorbs the concept without needing to wrestle with the academic citation. They just see the inflammation that won't resolve.
Exactly. But you know, once we anchor these concepts in a concrete patient, we immediately run into the reality of how a clinic actually treats that patient.
Which leads perfectly to our second point. The transition from the diagnostic six-level architecture to the actionable implementation phases lacks the grounded specificity required to drive actual systemic change.
Yes, absolutely. The weakness here is that while the paper excellently maps out blind spots and capture modes, things like measurement violence, algorithmic capture, and cultural masking, the proposed action cycle remains highly theoretical.
Right. It outlines what the steps are: recognize, rename, measure, expose, de-implement. But it assumes these actions can be deployed smoothly within health systems that the paper itself acknowledges are heavily captured by disease-centered metrics.
It lacks tactical friction. The diagnosis of the system's capture is brilliant, but the prescription feels a bit removed from the trenches.
There is a massive structural tension in the text right now. The paper argues that health is patterned by what the niche makes possible, yet the solutions seem to demand heroic, system-wide redesigns from individuals trapped inside those very niches.
Exactly. So my suggestion is to incorporate targeted friction studies that demonstrate exactly how a practitioner or policymaker can utilize the Life Coherent Action Cycle to dismantle a specific capture mode despite institutional resistance.
I love the idea of friction studies. Can you give a concrete example of what that would look like for, say, metric capture?
Sure. The paper notes that current systems focus on throughput, right? Patient seen per hour, rather than actual healing. So a friction study would be a detailed case study of a clinic attempting to redefine that success metric.
Okay, so showing the step-by-step process of moving from measuring throughput to tracking the restoration of margins.
Right. But crucially, you have to document the institutional pushback. What happens when the clinic attempts to document a patient's sleep recovery or relational belonging alongside their HbA1c levels?
The billing department will reject it. The electronic health record software won't even have a standardized field for it.
Exactly. Show the reader exactly how the clinic navigates those very real administrative realities using the framework's principles. We need to see the mechanism of change breaking down the mechanism of capture.
We can apply the exact same approach to the concept of de-implementing harmful practices, too. When the text discusses restoring the commons, it needs to detail the political pushback a hospital faces when addressing implementation violence.
Oh, definitely. Like if a hospital wants to stop requiring excessive repetitive paperwork from vulnerable patients because it consumes their psychological margins.
Right. They will immediately hit a wall of legal compliance and risk management protocols. But the text provides these excellent guardrail questions, like who benefits and who bears the burden.
Yeah, they are great questions, but a friction study should provide a template for how those questions are practically weaponized in a boardroom to win over skeptical stakeholders.
Weaponized in a boardroom. I like that. So the administrator fighting the paperwork burden uses the who bears the burden guardrail to demonstrate to the legal department that repetitive paperwork actually drives patient disengagement.
Exactly. Which leads to higher readmission rates and greater long-term liability. By turning the philosophical guardrails into tactical negotiation tools, the framework bridges the gap between high-level theory and Tuesday morning's committee meeting.
Which is huge. But even if a clinic successfully navigates that internal administrative friction, they inevitably hit the financial wall. Which brings us to our third major critique. The manuscript champions a necessary paradigm shift, but underestimates the necessity of aligning this vision with the immediate financial and operational incentives of current health institutions.
This is a critical vulnerability. The weakness here is that the text largely treats economic expansion and clinical billing units as antagonistic forces to life capacity.
Right. And while that's ethically sound based on the Life Value Foundation, ignoring how to economically justify this transition makes the paper read as a frictionless utopian ideal rather than a pragmatic policy tool.
It really doesn't adequately address the ultimate administrative question, which is, who pays for the protection of these margins?
Exactly. Current institutions only protect what they can value on a ledger. If I am pitching this to a hospital board, I cannot just talk about biological margins. I have to prove that investing in those margins today prevents a massive financial loss tomorrow.
Right. So the suggestion to fix this is to integrate an economic translation layer. The text needs to map the exposure repair balance onto existing institutional risk and cost-saving metrics.
That makes total sense. It is comparable to designing a beautifully efficient electric vehicle, but completely ignoring that there are no charging stations. The vehicle is technically superior, but it cannot run in the current environment.
That's spot on. We have to show them how restoring civil commons actually keeps the lights on. We have to translate biological concepts into actuarial reality.
So, for a concrete example, the paper must demonstrate how protecting biological margins, like supporting circadian restoration or reducing toxic burden, directly reduces long-term allostatic load.
Yes, and then map that reduced allostatic load onto tangible cost savings in chronic disease management or readmission penalties.
Like if a health system invests in a salutogenic affordance, like ensuring a patient has secure housing, the text needs to explicitly show how that upstream intervention prevents a $50,000 emergency room admission 6 months down the line.
Exactly. It transforms the concept of a salutogenic affordance from a social ideal into a highly effective risk mitigation strategy.
But the counterargument a hospital CFO will make is that these upstream interventions are simply too difficult to quantify. They will argue the return on investment is too delayed to justify reallocating budget away from highly profitable procedural departments.
Yeah, they absolutely will. So the paper must anticipate that exact counterargument and do the translation work for the CFO. Let's look at relational margins and care-seeking trust. Right? The text beautifully describes these as foundational to the civil commons.
Right, but the economic translation layer must reframe them as actionable strategies to reduce the costs associated with algorithmic capture and measurement violence.
Exactly. High-trust, continuous care environments actively reduce administrative overhead. They reduce the need for duplicated tests because the clinician has a longitudinal understanding of the patient's context.
And they reduce malpractice liabilities because communication is clear and grounded in mutual dignity. The paper needs to explicitly state that trust is economically efficient and measurement violence is incredibly expensive.
We are basically taking the framework's core principles and positioning them as the ultimate value-based care proposition. By leveraging that who bears the burden guardrail, the text can appeal to policymakers who are desperately trying to balance collapsing budgets.
The text really needs to show the cascading financial failure of the current model. When the burden of care is continuously pushed onto unpaid caregivers, those caregivers eventually burn out, right?
They do. They lose their margins, and then they become patients themselves. This literally doubles the cost of the system.
Wow, yeah. By mapping these dynamics, the framework proves that serving life capacity isn't just a moral imperative, it is the only economically sustainable path forward.
Right. Shifting the burden away from extraction and into formalized repair pathways prevents costly systemic breakdowns that current health systems simply cannot afford to absorb.
To recap, this critique highlighted three key opportunities to strengthen the framework. First, streamline the dense terminology by threading a concrete patient archetype through the six-level archetype to reduce cognitive load.
Second, ground the theoretical action cycle with practical friction studies that show exactly how to overcome institutional capture modes in reality.
And finally, translate the ethical call for life capacity into an economic proposition that aligns with the immediate financial incentives of health policymakers.
Implementing these actionable suggestions will make this robust philosophy a truly transformative tool.
We invite you to revise your work and submit it back in again for more feedback.